Hello, Capital Region. This is the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in beautiful North Central Troy, New York. I'm Mark Dunley.
And I'm Alexis Goldsmith.
And later on, we'll hear about the Martin Luther King celebrations in Saratoga and something about dairy, the food dairy bucket. But first, let's start off with some headlines.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo released his $175 billion state budget proposal for 2019 on Tuesday. The proposal includes plans for funding renovations to the public transportation infrastructure in New York City. Legalizing sports betting in casinos and recreational marijuana are in the document as well. He also called for a small increase in education aid, stricter limousine regulations following a fatal crash, voting reform, more infrastructure commitments, boosts to economic development for upstate New York cities, and environmental measures, including a ban on plastic bags and $1.5 million invested in offshore wind energy.
Governor Cuomo also called for a Green New Deal, which, among a number of noteworthy climate measures, included a goal of setting 100% of the state's electricity from clean power by 2040. While many praised his climate leadership, a number of climate advocacy groups called for him to go further. We will, after the Mr. Lombardo, hear a bit from that event. 350.org stated that Cuomo continues to allow frack gas pipelines and power plants to wreak havoc on our health and safety. Cuomo failed to mention concrete plans to get us from 5% renewables to a 100% renewable-powered fossil-free New York. In 2019, real climate action means no fossil fuel projects and making corporate polluters pay for their destruction.
Keep your outdoor weather gear handy because as much as 2 feet of snow may fall in the Capital District between Saturday and Monday.
A Rensselaer County resident is running for president. United States Senator Kirsten Gillibrand made her first campaign stop at the Country View Diner in Brunswick following her announcement on the Stephen Colbert Show. Gillibrand has opened her national campaign headquarters in Troy, where her home is located. We look forward to seeing her at WOOC. She said she would make improvements in education and health care. She also made it clear she did not like President Trump. Gillibrand has been a senator from New York since 2009, representing this area. Senator from 2009 after previously representing this area in 2007. She was born in Albany and graduated from Emerald Willard in Troy.
The Troy Record reports that embattled Coho's mayor, Sean Morse, has announced his intention to run for re-election this November. In his announcement at the Coho's Veterans Memorial at West End Park, Morse issued an apology and outlined some of his goals for the city. Morse has faced a number of domestic violence allegations as well as an FBI investigation. Morse touted his accomplishments, such as passing 3 consecutive budgets without any tax increases, renovating and reopening Coho's Music Hall, and what Morse said is $75 million in economic development.
For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to WOOC's Hudson Mohawk Magazine on 105.3 FM.
To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, questions, or warm regards, you can text us at 518-888-3004.
We talk now with Joe Lombardo, co-coordinator of the United National Anti-War Coalition and co-founder of Bethlehem Neighbors for Peace. UNAC is one of many groups calling for a peaceful mass mobilization against this year's NATO summit in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, March 30th. Additional actions will take place at the opening of the NATO meeting on April 4th. NATO will be celebrating their 70th anniversary on the 51st anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King.
Welcome, Joe. Can you give us a brief introduction of UNAC, and can you explain why groups are calling for national mobilization to oppose NATO war and racism?
Well, UNEC is the largest anti-war coalition in the country. It has about 160 member groups. It was actually founded in Albany at a conference of about 800 people in 2010. We've been organizing against the wars, as we say it, against the wars at home and abroad, because we believe the militarization of our whole society and it reflects itself on in the United States also. So when we heard that NATO was coming to Washington, D.C. for the 70th anniversary of their organization, we decided they needed to be protested. They were actually in the United States in 2012 in Chicago, and UNAC organized a demonstration against them, and it had about 15,000 people, and we considered it very successful, and we want to try to do a similar thing this year in D.C.
Now, it's called the National Mobilization to Oppose NATO War and Racism. Maybe you talk a little bit about how racism fits into the three demands.
Well, one of the things is the anniversary celebration will happen on April 4th. April 4th is also the anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King, and it was also the anniversary 1 year prior to his famous anti-war speech at Riverside Church in New York City, where he came out against the Vietnam War and characterized the United States as the greatest purveyor of violence in the world, and that is still clearly the situation. The United States has about 1,000 military bases in other countries, which is around 20 times the number of foreign military bases as all other countries in the world combined. Our military budget is close to that of all other countries in the world combined. Just the increase in our military budget this year is greater than the entire military budget of Russia, for instance. So,
and if I recollect, Congress gave more money in a military budget than President Trump asked for it?
Yes, they did. So,
a bipartisan effort, huh?
A bipartisan effort. About 60 cents out of every tax dollar goes to the military. And there's so much that needs to be done in this country. And that's why we can talk about the wars at home as well as the wars abroad, because the wars really do affect our population here in the United States.
The racism issue?
Well, it's...
I mean, you made reference, obviously, to
Dr. Martin Luther King. But racism is part of every single war. It's one of the ways they stoke the soldiers to fight the wars. They characterize people that the U.S. considers its enemy in very racist terms. They're gooks or they're ragheads. In Iraq, they called them sand niggers was the name that was used. And so when you can characterize people as subhuman in some ways, it takes away the sting that people have supposedly of killing them. But it doesn't really. We see all the post-traumatic stress of people coming back. And when people kill people, that's the result, because we're not really made to kill people. It causes some mental problems. The United States has never really dealt with the legacy of slavery or racism or white supremacy. If you go to Germany after World War II, they made it mandatory in every elementary school that you learn about anti-Semitism and you learn about what the Nazis did. And you're not allowed to have roads named after them or statues of Nazi leaders. If you want to have a statue, it's in a museum. But in this country, we have roads named after Confederate leaders. And really about 60 million blacks were killed in this country. So in our daily living in this country, we really have brought racism into our society in a very great way, and it's used to stoke the wars too. So on this anniversary of Martin Luther King's death, which is when they chose to have this a celebration of NATO, we think it's very important that we bring in the issue of racism along. And we hope by doing this, we're also going to be able to get significant sections of the civil rights and black rights movement to join us in the streets in Washington.
What are some things that anti-war, anti-racism groups are already doing throughout our region to mobilize?
Well, there's many anti-war groups in the area, and most of them hold events on a regular basis, vigils and forums and protests and so forth. We haven't gotten them all together to do this, to organize for the mobilization, and we haven't gotten them all to endorse the mobilization yet. My group, Bethlehem Neighbors for Peace, has. Today, after this program, actually, we will have the initial national meeting where about our steering committee, which represents 20 different peace and social justice groups from around the country, will start the initial steps, and then we'll be doing more in this region as well as other places throughout the country.
Now, are there particular policies or demands that the event is trying to, focus upon? And is there we all know that this event is not going to result in us being a peaceful country. So what are some of the follow-up steps that, you hope to see grow out of this event?
Well, each event is something in itself, but really what it does is it helps build a movement. And that's why we try to mobilize people and bring people out. A lot of people can identify that they are for peace or against war. In fact, the vast majority of the country in every poll that's taken shows that they are against war. However, when someone takes that first step and comes out in a demonstration, they commit themselves and they become an anti-war activist, and that allows us to build the movement. So we are demanding an end to NATO. NATO was started basically as an organization to oppose the Soviet Union, which doesn't exist anymore. But when the Soviet Union ended, Russia closed up all the foreign military bases that the Soviet Union had, which wasn't very many, actually. But the United States did exactly the opposite. They expanded NATO. And we had promised the Soviet Union that we would not expand NATO into the Eastern Europe or the Warsaw Bloc countries or to the former republics of the Soviet Union, but we are now in 12 of them. So it's a very aggressive policy. Russia is basically surrounded. Part of what's going on in the Ukraine is because the Ukraine has the longest border with Russia, and they would like to continue that surrounding of Russia. And our policy towards Russia and towards China and towards a number of other countries is a very aggressive military policy, and we think it needs to end for the sake of the world, because we're talking about climate change soon. Climate change is one way we can see the destruction of the world, but nuclear annihilation is another one, and we need to end war, and we need to end the destruction of our climate also.
Joe, you mentioned that Congress passed the largest ever military budget, but we have a new Congress in session, a historic Congress in session in terms of diversity, in terms of women. Where do our local congressional representatives stand on these issues, as well as Senators Schumer and Gillibrand?
Well, Schumer is a real hawk. He is. Every time there's any discussion of more money for war, he's for it. That's he really runs the Democratic side of the Senate. So he's a very significant person. Some of our representatives, like Tonko actually spoke at our first anti-war conference that we held here where UNAC was formed. He makes good sounds, but most often he votes for these appropriations. And the same with most of the Democrats. Right now, for some reason, the Democrats are taking a stand in Congress that they are more aggressive militarily. They don't want to see an end to the war in Syria. They don't want to see troops brought home. They don't want to see a less aggressive policy towards Russia. And so they are the ones that are proposing these higher budgets and going along with the real hawks. At one point in the anti-war movement, you could say there was a peace wing of the Democratic Party. There's not really a peace wing of the Democratic Party anymore, and war is a bipartisan issue. So the anti-war movement has to be independent of those two parties and has to build a grassroots movement, and that's what we're trying to do.
So we only have 3 minutes left, and one of those questions is going to be how to get, give people more information. But what are some of the one or two greatest misunderstandings or lack of awareness among the American people as to the reality of the American military machine?
Well, they try to say that we are over there to protect ourselves, and we're not in any sense. The more we go to these small countries, a country like Afghanistan, which is perhaps one of the poorest, maybe Haiti is poorer, it's one of the poorest countries in the world that had almost no military. The more we go in there and try to impose the will of Washington and Wall Street on these countries, it stokes the anger, and that's what causes what we are calling terrorism in many places around the world. A better presence for the United States internationally would be to do things like build infrastructure in these countries, build roads, build ability to for crops, for farming, and help make these people become self-sufficient. But instead, what we want to see is Wall Street get money out of each of these countries and investments. That's neoliberalism. And our military is there to support this neoliberalism, and it's causing great anger around the world. We are not there for peace. We are not there for protecting the American population. There's a much better way to do that, and war has never ended war. War has only caused more war.
So I guess we'll just finish up. You know, how do people contact you for more information about UNAC and the upcoming actions?
Well, UNAC, you could reach by our website, which is UNACPeace, UNACPEACE.org. Bethlehem Neighbors for Peace is BethlehemNeighborsForPeace.org. Those are two ways to get us. But there are two events, let me just quickly say, that are happening. Tomorrow I will be speaking to the Pittsfield Citizens for Peace.
Tomorrow being Thursday, because we play this on multiple days.
Okay, at 7:30. And I'll be speaking about a conference I just came back from in Dublin, where 35 peace activists from 35 countries were there to oppose NATO and U.S. foreign military bases. People are welcome to come to that. It's at 175 Woodell Avenue, which is the UU Church, Unitarian Church in Pittsfield. On Friday, the James Connolly Forum right here in Troy, at 313 10th Street in Troy at 7 p.m., we'll have a forum called Endless Wars, where they will have a man speaking who was graduated from West Point, and when he came out against from West Point, he decided he was against these wars and spoke against them, and they threw him out of the military for it and have been going after him. So you can go to one of those events and see peace activists from this area, or you could go to unacpeace.org.
Well, thank you, Joe. And we're going to move now to our next segment. Yesterday, or Tuesday, the governor had his somewhat annual State of the State address, and one of the big focuses was climate change. He actually got a fair amount of praise from groups for coming out with a program that was more ambitious than probably any other country, but still not quite what some of the more progressive groups would like to see. And speaking of those progressive groups, they gathered outside of the governor's State of the State budget address yesterday to call for a Green New Deal that stopped all new fossil fuel infrastructure and transitions to 100% renewable energy by 2030. We're going to hear from Alex Beecham of Food and Water Watch, Dr. Sandra Steingraber, Aaron Mayer of Clearwater, myself from the Green Education Legal Fund, Todd Fernandez of Climate Mondays, and we finish up with Kim Frazek of Sane Energy.
So I'm Alex Beecham. I'm with Food and Water Watch. Really excited to have such a big crowd. And I think this session, we're incredibly stoked about what could happen, right? The Republicans have control of nothing in Albany anymore. There are no more. Yeah. There are no more excuses. We need real action on climate change, not vague promises, not false solutions, not the governor uttering the words Green New Deal with no details or nothing behind it. We need strong leadership from Albany this year, and we're going to get it the same way we banned fracking, the same way we stopped the Constitution Pipeline and a bunch of other projects, by people like you coming to Albany over and over again and making them do it. We can stop new fossil fuel projects. We can get New York to 100% renewable energy by 2030, but it's going to take the grassroots getting us there to do it. So really, really excited about this session. And today, we're here to tell Governor Cuomo we need a real Green New Deal. That means no new fracked gas projects, none at all across the state, and it means 100% renewable energy by 2030. So with that, and just to kind of give folks a lay of the land if you haven't been here, so the speech is right in there. Speakers, I'm really honored to have Sandra Steingraber here today. Sandra is the co-founder. Yeah. Woo! Sandra's the co-founder of New Yorkers Against Fracking and now working on the fight to stop the Cayuga fracked gas plant on the shores of Cayuga Lake. I'll turn it over to Sandra.
You know me as a biologist and as a co-founder of New Yorkers Against Fracking and Concerned Health Professionals of New York, but I'm here today wearing my other hat as a citizen member of a new campaign, No Frack Gas Cayuga. We are seeking to decommission the dangerous, obsolete coal-burning power plant on the shores of Cayuga Lake and replace it with solar power and battery storage, rather than blindly following the current plan, which is to swap out the coal for frack gas, which would be trucked in from Pennsylvania, and it would just keep on burning fossil fuels. As such, No Frack Gas Cayuga is but one star today in a whole galaxy of us, this kind of meteoric climate movement here in New York that's blazing brightly and loud for the governor to hear and not ignore. All together, from the shores of the Finger Lakes to the shores of Long Island, we are saying that Governor Cuomo's promise for a Green New Deal for the Empire State must begin with a halt on new and proposed fossil fuel infrastructure. As Hurricane Sandy showed us, the state of our state is a function of the state of our climate, and the state of our climate is a state of emergency. In today's news, we learn that the Antarctic ice sheet is melting much more rapidly than we thought, leading to much more rapid sea level rise. And in October, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change showed us that if we want to solve that problem, we cannot just deal with carbon dioxide, but we must rapidly reduce methane as well, which means no more fracking and no more fracking infrastructure projects. And we're asking New York to lead the way. Governor Cuomo can be the climate leader that we need, but to do so, he needs to oppose the other wall, the wall of climate denial, the wall of climate delay, the wall of climate half measures. Governor Cuomo, your legacy rests on dismantling that wall. Governor Cuomo, we don't want an empty, vague promise. We want 100% renewable energy by 2030, in accordance with the science and the IPCC. We want no more fossil fuel projects, and we want a just transition for our workers. That's what dismantling the wall of climate denial means. Thank you.
Mayor, who's also on the board of Clearwater.
Listen, it's a real honor to be here at this particular state of the state. We have sent one of the most radical delegations of new Congress folks who are already changing the debate, and they are carrying forward a message that is really old as the state of New York. We talk about a Green New Deal. Well, the New Deal, the jobs in the New Deal, was what built our Civilian Conservation Corps, and that's what built the infrastructure of our national parks. So we know about making work, putting America to work, investing in America, and creating legacy and assets. Now, fast forward that 70 years later, we need a new Green New Deal that will save the planet. And saving the planet requires us to go 100% renewable now. It requires us to go and take a stand against all carbon. Frack gas is not cleaner, it's dirtier, and making New York State the gas highway, the gas pipeline corridor is a mistake. That is not trying to save the planet, that is destroying the planet. We need to take Sister Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's message to our state assembly, our state legislator, to make sure that they put forward the progressive legislation that A, ends our dependency upon carbon, B, puts New Yorkers together and building that green infrastructure, and C, and this is very, very important, end our dependence upon nuclear. Nuclear is not a clean energy. They like to do the flim-flam of saying, well, it's not emitting as they say, particulates, and it's not emitting carbon. When we talk about clean energy and sustainable energy, it is from cradle to grave, from the fuel that goes in to the waste that comes out. And nuclear is not a clean energy, it's not a clean fuel, and more importantly, it is one of the most hazardous and deadliest substances known to human and all species kind. We want green jobs. When do we want them? Now. What do we want? Green jobs. When do we want them? Now.
Great honor to introduce Mark Dunley. I'm going to take his mic in a second with the Green Education and Legal Fund. So I'll turn it over to you, Mark.
So the IPCC says we got 12 years left.
11 now.
11 now to save life on this planet. Is New York State moving fast enough?
No.
Do we need Governor Cuomo to say no to all fossil fuel infrastructure?
Yes.
Do we need the governor and the state legislature to say now is the time to invest in solar?
Yes.
In wind?
Yes.
In geothermal?
Yes.
In conservation?
Yes.
Now, one thing the governor wants to do is he wants to put more gas turbines about a mile from here in a low-income neighborhood in order to power this building. Is that a good idea? No. We should stop that and move to geothermal and to solar and wind. Now, it was kind of nice to hear the governor say that he wants a Green New Deal. But I don't think he yet wants a Green New Deal like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or Howie Hawkins yet. So we need to give him a little push on that. We want 100% clean energy now, 100% by 2030 for all energy, no nukes, no fossil fuels, no biomass. But we also need a just transition and an economic bill of rights.
Two more speakers, and then, as Mark said, I think Assemblymember Colton will come by. But I'm now excited to introduce Todd Fernandez. Todd has been leading Climate Mondays, and he's here today repping 350 NYC. I'll turn it over to Todd.
If there were a meteorite heading to the planet, all eyes would be focusing on the clock. How much time do we have to save humanity from destruction? Why are we not looking at the carbon clock? The pollution that we are pumping into the air right now, our pollution is going to lock in a course of global warming that is going to destroy life on Earth as we know it. We have 12 years worth of more of our pollution on our watch. And we need to set that emergency timeline in the front of every media report, of every politician in America. And we need to watch every day as if it was one of our last.
Chick Saint Energy.
Women speaking, right? We need more women speaking. We have the solutions. Repeat. We have the solutions. We have the solutions.
We have the solutions.
Why they're not being implemented is because of the corporate utilities and because Governor Cuomo wants to serve the banks before the people. We need true energy democracy. We know we don't need more fracked gas power plants. We know we don't need more pipelines. We can use geothermal. We can use air source heat pumps. We have the solutions. We can make all of our buildings energy retrofitted. We have the solutions. We have to organize ourselves in a way where the only way to move the people in that room is to threaten their power.
That was a report filed by Mark that covered the rally in support of a Green New Deal outside of Governor Cuomo's State of the State address. For those of you just tuning in, I'm Alexis.
And I'm Mark Dunley. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, Troy.
To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine program, to listen online, and to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, suggestions, or a sour bone to pick, you can text us at 518-888-3004. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region. Now we turn our attention to Amy Jones with the Capital District Women of Color. She's going to tell us about some experiences that are unique to women of color and about some events coming up this weekend.
Today on Capital People, I'm here with Amy Jones, one of the organizers and members of the Women of Color Collective of Albany. Amy, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me. It's so nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. Can you tell me a little bit about your organization, your role in the organization, and upcoming events that you have going on?
We are the Capital District Women of Color. We've been meeting since after the Women's March 2018, and we decided to meet as women of color, Black women and non-Black women of color, because we realized what's going on a national level. We realized also at a local level that women's marches are wonderful, but they do not always meet every intersection, and they do not always speak to issues that women of color and Black women have. So we decided to begin to meet and talk about what that meant to us.
What are some of the issues you feel don't get spoken about on a national scale with the more mainstream marches that you see in Washington or even that are happening?
As Black women, we have to look at everything through race. And at other times, other women don't want to see race, don't want to talk about race. To talk about race at all is racist. And we know that's not true. These are things that other women do not experience, and they are our daily experiences. Even within our communities of color, there is anti-Blackness. You know, so we talk about racial justice. We talk about intersections. We talk about gender as being a social construct, and gender nonconforming folks and trans folks and keeping folks safe and things that aren't necessarily on the forefront of every woman's mind, but things that we live with daily, microaggressions, things that we face at work, things that we face in the grocery store, things that you see on social media that may just be fodder and entertainment for others, but are part of our daily lives. Those are the things that we came together to talk about and to organize around. This year at our Women's March, we decided that we wanted to create space for ourselves and to talk about environmental racism, to talk about medical racism, to talk about birth justice, to talk about anti-Blackness and misogynoir, all the things that concern us.
What does this Women of Color March look like, and how does this Women of Color March plan to take up space? How do they plan to bring attention to these issues that you're talking about?
So we plan on having speakers that we have researched and that we understand over long periods of time. We have considered experts, and they have an analysis that they have studied out far. And that's important to us because, I mean, it shouldn't be radical for Black women to gather, but it is. Mm. It's radical in the fact that as much pushback as we're getting, and we're hearing words like divisive, and, you know, everyone loves to say unity, but we want justice, you know, and we want equity, you know, not equality. We want equity. We want justice. I think that buzzwords and social justice movements can be gentrified. They can be co-opted easily. We watched it with the Me Too movement, and there are people who have been on the ground and get kicked in the face and maced and locked up and moved away from their family. And now there are activists who get private jets to go to the White House and, you know, air quotes, protest. There are power dynamics, and those are the things that we want to address. I said this, I'm moving closer to 50 than not. And I did not go to college. I did not study gender and race. But what I did see in my own life was that the me of 10 years ago or 20 years ago would have benefited so much from seeing other women and other girls like myself who did not have community and did not understand that I wasn't, because of respectability that was born from white supremacist patriarchy, that I was on the fringes, the margins of society because of that. Because I'm fat, because I'm Black, being racially ambiguous, it is a privilege that I carry. From being neurodivergent, those are intersections. And mainstream society says, I don't fit. You know, and so I would have benefited from a community. And that is the community that we are trying to create.
You said that you've brought in experts. You also mentioned that you had not attended college. And it sounds like a few other folks also had not received formal education.
Mm-hmm.
Experts are not necessarily academic experts, but rather experts through experience. That sounds wonderful. So you're taking individuals who you yourself have seen on the fringe and are kind of sweeping them and pulling them into the center. That sounds like what this Women's March is intending to be. The march and the brunch, correct?
Absolutely.
That sounds great.
I guess the word now is directly impacted folks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's extremely important. Like, we're our own experts. I think when I said expert, that's what I meant. Like, we're our own experts. We do not need other people to come tell us what we need. We know what we need. And we've always done the most with less. And it's just so incredibly important. And it is revolutionary, and it shouldn't be, but it absolutely is revolutionary for us to gather that day. It's a dream. It's like absolutely a dream. There are people coming from Detroit, Michigan. There are people coming from Atlanta, Georgia, Long Island, Brooklyn, Queens. Like, I'm just so incredibly excited. And also the women from very different walks of life that are all Black and women of color from right here in the Capital Region, which is so very important, that there are going to be Christian preachers. There are going to be practitioners of ATRs. Light workers. There are going to be you know, women who have come out of politics, people have organized with BLM. I mean, I'm just so incredibly excited that we can all, regardless of politics, we are going to gather under the umbrella of real sisterhood. And that, because people say that it doesn't exist anymore, and I refuse to believe that it doesn't.
What can someone expect coming to the Women of Color brunch and rally on Saturday, January 19th. So it's a brunch in the morning. It starts at 10 a.m. Doors open around 9:30. And it's at the First Unitarian Universalist Church at 405 Washington Ave. What's in store for them?
So yeah, doors open at 9:30. They should expect really yummy food. They should expect to be served that food. We're going to have volunteers that are serving. Our MC and hostess for the day and hostess for the brunch is Amani O. And we are so blessed and honored to have them. They are an amazing raptivist, poet, farmer, all of the things. And we are so, so honored that they are going to host our day. During the brunch, Amani is going to do some poetry. I believe the amazing Dee Collin is going to be there doing one of her pieces and going to have some of her art there for sale. Amani is going to lead us learning some of the chants for the march, and then we're going to collect ourselves and go to Townsend Park from 12 on. I believe it's 12 to 2, and hear our speakers. Our keynote speakers are Amani O, Shamika Andrews, Tamala Gordon, Kleana Lightburn. We're going to hear from Mahalia Cummings on birth justice. We're going to hear from former president of the Common Council, Carolyn McLaughlin. We're going to hear from Dee Dee Delgado from BLM Cambridge. And we're going to hear, I believe, from Lisa Good, who works around trauma and intra-community violence.
That sounds incredible. It sounds like a great day. How do you get your name in a hat, or, you know, how do you get involved with this?
So, amazing question, because you do have to register. It's extremely important that we know we have a count for the day so that we can plan on the food, and there is a capacity ordinance for the event space. So to register for the brunch, you would go to bit.ly/2019WOC brunch. bit.ly/2019 WOC brunch. That link is for the registration. For the march, it is bit.ly/AlbanyWomen'sMarch2019. If you are not a woman of color and would like to volunteer, if you consider yourself allied or an accomplice, a good one, it is bit.ly/2019CDWOC volunteers. That's bit.ly/2019CDWOC volunteers.
If folks can't physically be there but want to just help in some way, is there a way to donate to the cause?
Absolutely. We are still raising money. We've had a wonderful response, but we are still raising money to pay our speakers and all of the things needed for the day. And so that link is bit.ly/CDWOC donate. bit.ly/CDWOC donate.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Amy. I really appreciate it, and I can't wait to see you. And it really looks like it's going to be a great event. I'm really excited, and I really believe that the 19th is going to be an incredible day. It's going to be a really powerful day.
Awesome. Thank you, Clara.
And again, you can join us on January 19th at 10 a.m. at the First Unitarian Universalist Church in Albany, New York, at 405 Washington Avenue. And there you have it, Amy Jones, Capital Person. Until next time.
And that was Cleona with Amy Jones of Capital District Women of Color on their upcoming brunch and rally. Communities across the country are gearing up for the commemorations of the late Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.'s life and legacy. In our next segment, Hudson Mohawk Magazine correspondent Steve Pierce speaks with Leslie Danner about an ambitious weekend of events organized by MLK Saratoga.
MLK Saratoga is the next incarnation of a community project group that's been producing Dr. King celebrations for over 25 years now. And 3 years ago, this will be our fourth annual Dr. King celebration weekend. We decided 4 years ago to make this a larger than one day commemoration and event. And this past year, we actually rippled out what we were doing beyond the weekend. So we've been doing events throughout the year. We also had a march, silent march down Broadway in commemoration of the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's assassination. So we're starting to show up in a variety of ways in our community and draw on the other organizations in our community that have overlap specialties, but we're finding ways of building more alliances together. Because MLK Saratoga, that's really our feeling, is that our mission is to utilizing the arts, in particular performance and art and literature, to create opportunity for greater community dialogue and bridging.
Does MLK Saratoga have activities during the rest of the year as well?
We're having more. This year, as I was saying, we were able to hold a march and a vigil around the anniversary of Dr. King's death. Part of that was also a wonderful photographic display of Skidmore student artwork that had been taken during that march in Saratoga, and that was pretty powerful. We're showing up at other events that have some connective tissue to civil rights and human rights issues. And we're looking forward to sponsoring even more authors to come and keynote speakers in the coming year.
Well, I was struck when I saw your publicity because, first of all, you have a really great graphic, which just jumps out of the page and screen.
Well, thank you. That is Beth Rowan, the very talented, we call her our graphic goddess, just makes it happen. And it does. It's got power in it, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And it calls attention to the fact that you have such a broad and ambitious program plan, and pretty vivid contrast to what's going on in other parts of the capital region and around the country. Instead of having individual groups doing individual events scattered throughout the weekend, you have a very cohesive feel to the program. It's feels like it's the embodiment of what you're talking about in terms of working with other organizations to try to build something bigger than any one of them. What brings that about?
I'm really jazzed to hear you say that. In part, we've got a group that has really a big vision, and the practical side is that we can't possibly do it all, and that there is an element to us functioning more like a hub that is going to allow us a broader reach. And how do we activate other elements in our city and our community to take more action and to be more involved and to feel more empowered? Part of the vision is over the next 5 years to actually create a citywide experience that it becomes not just community building, but business building, and that we get businesses happening. And I've been stirring the pot with some of our local breweries to come up with some specialty brews for that time, and restaurants involved in different groups, that it's not doesn't just have to come through the one vehicle of MLK Saratoga. So that would be an extraordinary seed to have planted.
So folks can go to mlksaratoga.org to find out about all the activities, but maybe you could cover some of the highlights.
I would love to do that. We launch our whole weekend with the Dr. King Challenge, and this year we are at the Holiday Inn in Saratoga. They've been fantastic in supporting us and getting ready for this. It starts at 7 o'clock with our opening reception, which includes light finger foods and a cash bar, and then at 8 o'clock. We have till 9:30. We have an array of regional performers who are doing micro performances, very edgy, provocative things that relate particularly to this last year's events. There's plenty to pull from, but we've got Azam Hamid with Smooth Keys, who is our sort of our musical host for the evening and creating that wonderful backdrop and segue as I move people in and out. This is an event that I've been curating for a little while here. I've got spoken artists like D. Collin is going to be there, and Poetic Visions is coming in. I've got Carell Irving, who is this dynamic a young man from Schenectady, who I'm very excited. Scrambled, who's a young rapper, and she's in from New York City, and I've been delighted to have her. She's actually written the piece just for this evening. I have some of Illuminate's wonderful artists of color who are coming up, Aaron Moore and Carmen Lookshire and Vanessa, I'm forgetting Vanessa's last name at the moment, Pereza Marufo. And so we've got vocalists as well, including Robert Miranda, who's accompanied by Dustin DeLuke. And then Kim Wafer's coming in to do Shirley Chisholm. So we're trying to highlight the voices of color in particular. We're also bringing forward women's issues. I'm an artistic director to SHIFT, Saratoga's Humanitarian Youth for Transformation. And these are teenagers who love the performance, but they also have minds that are reaching way out into activism and global issues. And the kids this year have chosen to do a piece, Water is Life, and contrasting oil and water, and it's pretty in-your-face provocative. So we are covering an array of stuff, and all of this is going to be bookend with the amazing international global jazz group called Herd. And I believe they're based here out of Troy. So they're coming up. They're going to open the evening, and then we're going to close out with about 45 minutes of dancing and deep rhythms with them. So it's a very exciting evening. That launches us, and we jump into Saturday. Some of us will be attending the Women's March in Saratoga Springs, and that is starting at 1 o'clock, and they're meeting at the Spirit of Life in Congress. Very short program at the top of that, and then we'll march down Broadway. And then our programming, MLK Saratoga's programming, continues at Cafe Lena's, and we've got the inimitable Garland Nelson is doing Shout It Out, and he's doing an hour-long look at a historical sort of musical overview of the African-American experience and music. And that's going to be a very interactive, very fun-filled afternoon. That is followed by an extraordinary opportunity for us. Yaddo is joining forces with us, and they've brought in an extraordinary woman. Her name is Kima Jones. She's a poet and a writer and a publicist, and she is the founder of Jack Jones Literary Arts, and she's making some big waves out in the LA scene. She's coming in to spend an hour and a half with us talking about writers of color, particularly women. And then the evening wraps up with Creative Action Unlimited. This is under the direction of Michael Kennedy, and she's brought these women together to create a very powerful theatrical experience of women talking about their experiences grappling with harassment in our day and age. So very full experience at Cafe Lena's. Sunday, we have a implicit bias workshop being offered at the library in the afternoon. This is with Ray Anderson, warm, wonderful man, 30 years in the military. A lot of that has been as a equal opportunity trainer. He brings exceptional insight to what he's doing, and he's going to speak to us, and it's an interactive workshop. So people can start to dig deeper into understanding all of these subtle ways in which we pass judgment or quickly pigeonhole people very subtly. So it's a very wonderful, provocative opportunity. The evening has us getting up on our feet. We've got Donald Hyman and Penny Meacham, who are regional performers in our area who write a lot of original material. They are presenting an Aretha Franklin tribute, and their colleague, Sister Lucille, is going to be doing interpretive dance. And that starts off our evening at the Parting Glass, which typically Irish, but we're going to bring in a little soul, because following the 20 minutes with the tribute, we have the extraordinary Heavenly Echoes. And if you've ever had a chance to be around them, these older gentlemen just light up the stage with their soul R&B. So that's our Sunday Get Up and Dance community experience. And then that drives us all home to Monday. At the starts at 9:15 in the morning with registration at the public library in Saratoga Springs. They are kindly, graciously hosting us again, and we've got a morning of community volunteer projects. And there are a few off-site projects that are also available, including some support for Code Blue in Saratoga Springs. So following the morning's volunteer opportunities, and please go to our Day of Service page on our website to see what some of those projects are. We then have our community celebration, and this year it's being held at the Presbyterian New England Congregational Church, which is over on Circular, and 2 to 4 o'clock, and we are going to be, that's hosted by Garland Nelson, who is an extraordinary force in Saratoga Springs and one of our preeminent musicians and energy raisers. He hosts for us, and we have Diana Domingo, who is going to be singing for us, along with Dr. Mary Nell. Morgan Brown is going to do an interactive call response with the folks who have gathered, and Shift will do another piece. And then we're turning everything over to Daryl Davis, who I understand you've had a chance to talk with already. So he'll be with us for 90 minutes of that. It's going to be an exceptional, extraordinary afternoon with a followed up by a reception.
So, wow.
Wow. We got a full weekend ahead of us.
I'm physically and emotionally exhausted, and it's only Wednesday. Well, that's fantastic. The folks who are interested in going there to Saratoga to take part in this can go to mlksaratoga.org to find out all the details. It sounds like folks should probably make reservations, even though the events are, for the most part, free, right?
Yes, all of the events are free and open to the public, with the exception of Monday evening, we have a concert at Cafe Lena's with Daryl Davis, and that is a $15 ticket, and those are going pretty fast. We do, of course, are always open and welcome any donations at any of the events, but we do want this to be community accessible across the board.
That was Leslie Dana, who is on the steering committee of MLK Saratoga. For more information, visit www.mlksaratoga.org. In our next segment, Unity House Food Security Manager Amy Halloran talks about diet and the new year.
Hi, I'm Amy Halloran, Food Security Manager at Unity House. I'm here with another food diary to chat a little bit about the food environment in Troy, New York. Right now, it's the beginning of the year, and a lot of people are thinking about their waistlines and how to have better eating habits. I want you to pull the lens back a bit and think about the food environment in another way. Not your personal responsibility, but our social responsibility to have a better eating pattern for everyone. I think that there is a right to food and that we all should have a good access to healthy, nutritious food. That's essentially what food security is, getting enough food to meet your daily requirements in a culturally appropriate way. We don't have a right to food in our country. We supposedly have a right to education and right to clean water, but those are a little threatened as well. I think that in considering food, we will see that it's not personal responsibility so much as individual awareness of the greater food system and how we all fit into it. The food system is giant and we are small. So instead of worrying about your calorie intake, worry about your energy and the energy that you have to help other people. How can you make things better? Can you maybe volunteer at a soup kitchen or a food pantry? Do you want to start a cooking club with your neighbors? Maybe get together and make dinner for everyone? Maybe there are other food solutions you can find, like volunteering for some of the many organizations that are doing great food justice work in the Capital District, such as the Regional Food Bank, the Food Pantries of the Capital District, Soul Fire Farm, all doing some of the heavy lifting that we have to do to feed each other. This has been Amy Halloran chatting with you about food and the food environment. Don't blame yourself for all the cookies in the universe and eating them. Think instead about why the food industry got so big and how we can dial it down to size and feed our neighbors.
That was Amy Halloran, Food Security Manager for Unity House in Troy. And that concludes our show. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Mark Dunlight.
And I'm Alexis Goldsmith. Our engineer tonight is Jonah. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news. You can also get that dose through our Hudson Mohawk Magazine podcast and Facebook page. If you have comments, suggestions, or a tender confession, you can text us at 518-888-3004. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.
We'd like to remind you that WOOC 105.3 is produced by local volunteers. If you're interested in volunteering with our radio effort, shoot us an email at info@mediasanctuary.org or just stop by one of our weekly meetings on Monday nights at 7:07 p.m. held right here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Until next time, folks, thanks for tuning in.